Particularly if you or anyone has been practicing mindfulness Vipassana practice before in other styles, and there are many styles, and I want to say they're all valid because there's probably some, you know, cockamamie style some person made up that I don't know about that I couldn't speak of. But, you know, all the different ones I know, they're all valid. They're all from within their own framework of what's being accentuated, as I said yesterday. And so if you're new to this form or you haven't done it much, as I mentioned, switching our technique of Vipassana meditation for everyone can feel a bit awkward, and because the mind gets in habits. And I found my mind's meditation habits were some of the strongest habits to shift. I don't want to say break, because they weren't bad habits, but it's just, you know, however, as Metta mentioned what I said yesterday, I was impressed you remembered what I said yesterday, Metta. I said, oh, good. Somebody was listening. He probably wrote it down. I'm sure. Anyway, whatever qualities are in our consciousness in the moment, they're more likely to tip into the next moment, the wholesome, the beautiful, as well as the difficult and the tormenting. So habits of mind and meditation that we've practiced many, many, many mind moments, of course, are natural to arise. That's not a problem. That's just nature. So the particular area that was some people mentioned, and I just want to speak to today in this particular style, is the difference between, well, back up. All Vipassana practice is really cultivating sati, samadhi, and panya, right? Sati, mindfulness, knowing what's happening. Samadhi, in English, we often translate it as concentration, but I prefer collectedness or stability of mind. It gives a wider understanding, and I'll speak to that in a moment. And panya, wisdom, which we've talked about. I talked yesterday about how the steadiness of awareness with right attitude naturally is the natural effect of that is panya, wisdom, the understanding from clear seeing. So we're all are cultivating that. But there's different emphases within the technique. So for many of us, me too, we have learned that the emphasis on the samadhi part, the stability of mind, we've learned to have that come about largely through steady, intentional focus on one object, right? So say the breath. I mean, that's what many of us have done. And so we learned to just keep coming back to the breath, feeling the breath. And even though the moment, each moment of breath is changing, there's a sense of steadying and stabilizing the mind through getting really steady on one object, right? This makes sense so far. You can relate to that. And so we think of concentration often as the stability of mind that's really collected on one object. And of course, that can go to great, great depths where it stops being Vipassana, which is cultivating mindfulness and wisdom, but samatha practice, moving into jhana practice, which is like very, very, very deep, and I'm using concentration specifically now, very deep focus on one object to the natural exclusion of everything else. And on the way to that, we're choosing to exclude. Other things come up and we come back to the breath. But as that level of jhana level samadhi develops, other stuff ceases to make its way in, you know? The mind gets so, so focused. Now, this can be a lovely experience. For one thing, I mean, in a wholesome way, that the stability of mind is very pleasant in a way the mind's not flipping all over the place, right? We like that. And part of what brings the peacefulness, the pleasantness of that, is that what's stabilizing the mind is it's not getting thrown back and forth, ping-pong balling around through wanting and aversion, through liking and disliking. The kilesas aren't really getting in. The hindrances don't get in when the mind is really focused in that way. And I know the first few times I experienced that, that I recognized what was happening, like, wow. The peace of a pure heart mind in that moment is so lovely. And until we experience it, we don't really know. Okay, this is just my New York way of talking. We don't know what a mess our minds really are. And we don't even know it's possible to go, oh, wow. We don't really recognize what's so nice about it at first, but it's like, oh, I'm not wanting this and disliking that and judging. So that's lovely. Okay. In this style of practice, and so many Vipassana forms start with that and get steady in that way and then open up. When we always say open up, and then it's like it's open or it's closed, which for the style we're doing here gives a false dichotomy. But we begin to include other objects. Okay. So in this style, of course, we're cultivating sati, samadhi, and panya. But the quality of samadhi arises through a different route, you could say, than the really specific one-pointed focus. So in this case, let's call samadhi stability of mind. The mind that isn't like being thrown hither and there, but it doesn't have to arise through deliberate one-pointed focus. That's one way the stability of mind arises. It's totally fine. Another way, and I hadn't really thought about it this way till I heard Sayadaw Tejaniya, and he's using his language, but it's so true, that when we're mindful, sati, knowing what's happening with awareness, with right attitude, which you notice I've been banging on that, you know, all day, right? When we're present with the attitude of whatever's arising is simply an object to be known, that brings stability of mind. When it's not there, the mind's not stable. I'll give you a couple of very simple examples. So say we're in a sitting, because it's easier to observe this in a sitting when we're doing less, but it's the same whatever we're doing. But say in a sitting, and well, like I was talking about my friend in Burma and the sound of the guy snoring behind him. So you're sitting in this really, really loud noise going on, and it's unpleasant, and there's a sense this shouldn't be happening. So either you're in your home and you said, I told the family to be quiet, they're making this noise, it shouldn't be happening, it's bothering me, it's messing up my practice, whatever you're thinking, but that shouldn't be there. Right away, the mind becomes quite unstable, doesn't it? It's like jerking around, it's not liking, it leads into the papancha, the proliferation of what it means and what I like. And basically, it's torment driven. You know, it's driven by wanting it different, by judging it outward or inward, judging the experience, judging yourself, whatever. And I said, that has to go away for stability. You get a sense what I mean? Now, when it's really strong, one-pointed focus concentration, when it gets really strong, that sound might not come in, or even if it comes in, the mind's so steady, it doesn't even hardly, doesn't react at all. But on the way to that, when we're trying to get really steady and focused, trying being the optimal word, that sound would be in the way. And because it's perceived as in the way, the mind gets unstable and reactive, right? Now in this style, or it could be any style, the present, feeling the breath, for example, a loud sound arises, the body jumps, and awareness says, oh, that's what's happening now. Loud sound, body jumps. The stability of mind is not upset, because the stability is not about steadiness of object. The stability we're learning to recognize and trust is about the moment-to-moment steadiness of awareness. And awareness doesn't care what the object is. So the object's changing every moment. So with the right attitude of whatever's arising in any of the six sense experiences, as Utejaniya says all the time, he says, a practitioner is one who uses all experiences at each of the six sense doors to develop sati, samadhi, and panya. So in other words, you're calm with the breath, loud sound arises, shaking arises. Right attitude is, okay, shaking's like this, unpleasant is like this, little squirt of aversion is like this. All of those equally objects that can contribute to awareness in this moment. You get a sense, I mean, it takes practice because we're completely into it. It should be like this, it shouldn't be like that. But as this develops, it's a kind of stability that's flexible because it can include everything that's arising. Another simple example, we'll use sitting again. Whether it's being with the breath or not with the breath, but sometimes when we're with changing experience, but there's times that that bugs us because we feel like we can't catch up, but that's just an idea. There's nothing to catch up to. But there's times things are changing, you know, and there's awareness and it's calm and it's nice. Have you ever experienced that? And secretly, or maybe not so secretly, but if you're secretly in the back of the mind, in the front of the mind, we're going, yes, just aware of whatever's happening. Secretly, we're thinking, this is how it's supposed to be. Now, this is what receptive, open awareness feels like. This is right. And so then thoughts that have been planning starts coming, strong planning. You're getting caught in it. And this is not how it's supposed to be. So when that arises, and just like the sound, it's not okay. It shouldn't be happening. Then it's not right attitude in the mind. It's a sense of wrong. This is wrong. Aversion, not recognized because we're believing this shouldn't be happening, this planning. And again, the mind in that moment loses its stability. Things are happening. It's nice and calm. Things are changing. We've really got it. And strong planning comes up. And right attitude, and we're not always going to have right attitude, but we aspire. Right attitude is, oh, planning's happening now. Agitation's happening now. Completely present just with that. Not, this is, of course, not that you should try and make it be this way, but this is how it feels in those moments. Now it's agitation. How it was before, the conditions have changed. And conditions are always changing. As soon as you think this is how it's supposed to be, you're headed for a fall. No way around it, because nothing stays the same. But anyway, do you get a sense of what I'm saying about how when just simply in a moment of awareness, with wise attitude, right attitude, whatever's arising as the object of awareness is a fine object. It takes longer, as I said yesterday, but this stability, this flexible stability of mind of awareness really does start to strengthen. And you might, we're all different. The first time I sat for some time with Sayadaw in Burma. I mean, you don't see him much, you know, so I'm blabbing at you all day, but you'd get like one 45 minute thing from him and maybe not talk to him for 5 days. So you're pretty much left on your own with your habits. So that's one way it could take longer, even though I was on retreat. But it took, I'd say 10 days before I really felt, I really noticed, understood, recognized, I could feel what that sense of stable samadhi, stability of mind, that kind of inclusive samadhi, if you want to call it that, to kind of feel it. And it's different, you know, because it's not about certain things shouldn't arise. Wanting can still arise and it's noticed, you know. So it's different. I just wanted to talk about that to hopefully encourage you to just keep exploring. And of course, our mind will compare to what we already know. And if you've practiced a lot in other styles, the mind will naturally, for most of, make markers. You're like, we're marking, by this time I was at this place and now it doesn't feel like that. And what should I do? What am I doing wrong? but there's different markers in different styles. So I just wanted to talk about that sense. That stability of mind is developing in a different way, and the power of this right attitude. And it's not like you have to have right attitude and hold on. I hope I make that clear. You just be quiet. We'll just sit and notice what arises. It's like so little we have to do. We want to get in there and muck around and fix it. And then, as soon as we start doing that, you'll feel the tension. What's happening? How can I fix it? Oh, tension's like this. That's all you have to do. You don't have to figure it out. Oh, tension's like this. No, that's stupid. That's too easy. Tension's like this. Come on, try it. Do it. Notice the next thing that arises. This is where we learn to trust. And it just takes practice. It just takes practice. And you're perfectly free at the end of this weekend or the next week to say, you know what? This is, maybe it works for her. I don't get anything out of this. I'm just like la-la walking around and thinking this is doing fine. Whatever works for you, use the technique that supports your cultivation, not of feeling good, not of pumping up our sense of being a good meditator, but what supports steady awareness, whatever it is, what supports recognizing when the torments are present rather than having them run our actions. So the more we're aware, what supports the wisdom of seeing, oh, that's what's going on now. And you can feel there's less being caught up in our difficult personality patterns. They don't go away. I'm sorry to say they may weaken, but they come up and it's, oh, you can just see the cause. And it's like you're standing there watching yourself go through this. How many times have I watched myself go through this? About 10 million. Okay. Cause and effect. You put these causes in, punch the button, this personality trait comes out. And awareness notices it. Awareness isn't fussed. So over the time of this practice, more and more our interest, our emphasis comes to be in this resting into the awareness and trusting that with steady awareness, wisdom is what's developed. You don't have to be afraid that with awareness and not getting in there and mucking around, you're going to act more and more stupid and more bad. It's the other way around. I mean, if we could control not doing stupid things, maybe you guys can. Maybe I'm just exhibiting my own problems. But if you could control never saying something from aversion, if you could control not falling into self-doubt, if you could control our personality patterns and just be, the compassionate bodhisattva of the ages, we would have done it long ago, wouldn't we? I mean, that sounds good. I remember Sharon Salzberg talking about, when she first practiced in India, when you get into really beautiful spaces, the purified heart mind, like I talked about. And it's so real, it's so tangible, it's so obvious that this is our natural potential, our natural state. We think, well, how can it ever be different? Have you had that experience? Oh, now I really understand. Ill will and craving are just suffering. I'm not going to do that anymore. And Sharon would imagine herself, she'd say, floating down the street in New York, just, exuding compassion. Well, if you've practiced before, I see smiles. We know that isn't the case. The mind's changing every moment. The habits are strong, right? So why did I go off on that? Because I'm trying to encourage you. It's okay. Trusting the awareness doesn't mean we're going to act more out of the habits. It's what allows the wisdom mind to see accurately what's actually feeding this unwholesome habit. Without really being able to have awareness throughout the whole habit arising and acting out and falling away, we don't really see what's feeding it. We might have ideas. I'll give you one example, then I'll shut up and we can sit. just a prep habit. A few years ago, on a retreat at IMS with Sayadaw Tejaniya, and one woman was in the group, and she had sat with him quite a bit before. She understood the deal. So she was, you know, talking to him about how wisdom arises in the mind, but she still found herself acting from greed, and she didn't understand it. She gave the example that she's highly allergic to some certain kinds of foods. Went into and some made a clear intention from wisdom in that moment of making the intention, I'm not going to eat those foods, even if they serve them. Went into the dining room at IMS in Massachusetts for the lunch meal. And when you walk in there, there's a blackboard and it's written, you know, what the food is, what the menu is. So she said, I went in and I saw it was this thing I shouldn't eat, but I really love it, you know? And I just saw myself go and said, I'm not going to eat it. And I went and I helped myself to that stuff and I ate it down and I really enjoyed it. And then I felt sick. And she said to him, so why? I had wisdom. There was wisdom and the clear intention. You know, I don't understand. And he said, and he's kind of funny and cuts to the point. And he goes, weak wisdom, strong kalesa. You know, the wisdom's weak. The wisdom was there for a moment. But the next moment, the mind moment changes, and the power of seeing and the wanting that came from the seeing of that thing on the blackboard was stronger, and not recognize and react from it. But watching all of that with awareness gave her a lot more information as to what happened between the wise intention and the chowing down on the food. Really seeing what gave rise to the wanting, just the seeing the menu, the thinking about the pleasantness of it, and then seeing how the wanting got so strong that it was stronger than awareness and strong, well, awareness could notice, but stronger than any intention not to act on it. But bringing awareness through that whole process is where the learning comes. You know, our tendency is we start acting out, we turn awareness off because it's unpleasant and it's not doing us any good. We're acting out anyway, so why bother? But that's why we don't see how the unwholesome gets going and we're caught in it. So bring awareness along. You can relax into the awareness. Watch yourself go from the craving. You're gonna do it anyway. You might as well do it with awareness. And then the wisdom starts to come of how it's, oh, that's how it happens. May not stop right away, but we have a lot more information, and that's panya, wisdom. See, so just learning to trust this, receiving whatever's occurring. So that's my morning wrap, why we're practicing in this way.